Okay, Jack. Use that blade.
Cut top out of net. We slip away.
The pressure of mesh against Christie's head gradually lessened. Then the weight pinning her to the ground lifted. JB helped Jack peel the net down so Christie and the others could get free. They had no more than straightened when a harsh male voice barked at them.
Stay right where you are!
It was too late to run. Two of the armored figures held them covered with light blasters. A third walked casually over to the curb, picked up the canister, and shrugged into its harness straps. The fourth hung back, watching. JB ignored the three-barreled long blaster pointed at his chest.
Are you bastards human, or are you red-blasted muty cockroaches?
Okay, let's detent.
Christie watched as the black helmets turned clear. They were all men, between the ages of 30 and 40. The one with the canister wore a red, billless cap.
You've got human heads, anyway.
JB leaned forward for a better look.
Do the suits come off?
Of course.
How about the heads?
We don't have time to play with them, Colonel. We're set to launch in T-minus 4 minutes.
Put the launch on standby.
Colonel?
Do it!
The rifleman turned away and headed for what had to be the makeshift missile control center, a table pulled out of one of the gaudies with white coat electronic gear stacked on it.
We were going to let you live until after the launch. Now you've given us no choice. We can't have you running around loose while we're trying to get the missile away. We've got to take care of you before we proceed.
Out of the corner of her eye, Christie saw Jack move. With a flick of his wrist, he sent the leaf-bladed knife spinning toward the colonel's throat at a speed almost too fast to follow. 3 feet from the target, the blade was slapped away by an invisible hand, and it dropped harmlessly to the dirt.
I thought you said you searched these people for weapons.
Sorry, sir. That kid had so much metal sewn into his clothes, there was no way of telling what he was carrying. The only way to make sure he was unarmed was to strip him naked. Pedro didn't want to do it. Neither did I.
Where's Ryan? What have you done to him?
Ryan? You mean the guy with the eye patch? He's long gone. I wouldn't count on seeing him again in this life.
The colonel waved the fourth man forward.
Highlander, go ahead and take your samples now.
The guy with the walrus mustache stepped over to the squat cube, and from behind it took out a gleaming silver apparatus. It had a pistol grip and a latticework cylindrical frame. He gripped a small knob at the frame's opening and gave it a pull. Christie was standing close enough to see the razor-sharp inner ring slide back and lock in place.
Are you sure you want them to do this, Colonel? If we just tie them up again, they can't interfere with the launch.
We've each got our own jobs to do, Ackerman. Part of Highlander's job is to analyze tissue samples for disease vectors. It's important work, or Five wouldn't have asked him to do it. They need the information if they're going to protect our people after they arrive.
Something behind the armored figures caught Christie's attention. A vague shimmering in the middle of the street, like heat waves rippling. Only it couldn't have been. The sun was barely up. Then the shimmer began to rotate, and she saw the glittering motes within, spinning faster and faster. After daybreak, Ryan got a good look at his surroundings. This earth needed the night to make it seem less hideous. By day, he could see that the roofs of most of the skyscrapers and high tower blocks were splintered and caved in. The top stories, visible above the canopy of skyline, were cadaverous wrecks. Windows were broken out, and scorch marks from ancient fires blackened the outer walls. And the megalopolis didn't reach the horizon in all directions. When Ryan moved to a far corner of the roof, he got a glimpse of what lay on the far side of the nuclear cooling towers. Strip mine terraces for as far as the eye could see. Huge rusting skeletons of extraction machinery. Monster wags designed to haul hundreds of tons of rock lay overturned and abandoned. Nothing was green. The only colors were the red of the dirt and the gray of the concrete. They prepared to leave the rooftop.
What's the plan after we get in the complex?
Since the captain knows the place so well, I was hoping she'd have some suggestions.
Yeah, I do. We should forget about trying to make a deal with the CEOs and head straight for the passageway to Shadow World. Fight our way in if we have to. Based on the firepower Five's been throwing at us, I don't think Ryan's much of a bargaining chip anymore. They might have already written him off. Once we're inside the chamber, we've got a lot more options to work with. If Five won't trade for Ryan, It's going to want to keep its equipment in tip-top shape. We can barricade ourselves in, do a little minor damage to show we mean business, then bargain for a trip out of here.
Puts us on the offensive. I like it.
It might even work.
When Thrill Bill started to lead them from rooftop to rooftop, Ryan realized he'd been right about waiting until dawn. There were sec devices on every roof. The warlord knew how to outfox them, though. Another reason not to try the move at night was that some of the crossings were on ledges no wider than a hand span. They followed a complicated route, dictated by the irregularity of the building's shapes and the differences in their heights. They had to climb down before they could go up, and vice versa. After they'd been moving a while, Ryan caught the now familiar sound of rotor-driven aircraft approaching. Thrill Bill waved for them to take cover behind an upraised ledge. A squadron of black airships passed overhead, moving the same direction they were.
Those were Five's assault gyros, probably reinforcing the totality complex.
I never promised this was going to be easy.
10 minutes later, soaked with sweat, Ryan peered over a roof ledge that overlooked their destination. Three of the black ships had landed on the enormous flat roof below, and men in armor stood around a little outhouse-like hut in the middle of the space. Beyond them were rows of raised skylights.
That hut is one way in.
I hope you've got a second choice.
Yeah, but there's a problem. If we don't take care of those guys now, we're gonna have to face them later once we're inside. I hadn't planned on going in quiet. When we make our big entrance, the noise is gonna make them come running.
No way we can kill all those troopers down there. If we try, we'll never get in the building. We have to use surprise and speed. Break in no matter how much noise it makes.
Yeah, and let them take us out if they can.
They circled and came around the structure from the far side, hopping down from an adjoining building. That roof was much bigger than the one on the HBK tower. Ryan couldn't see the aircraft or any of the black-armored men. Thrill Bill led them to the rows of elevated skylights, then turned and started to run parallel to them. He seemed to know where he was going. He slowed after a few hundred feet, then stopped.
What do you think, Captain? Shouldn't this about do it?
There's no way we can get any closer from up here.
Everybody dump out your packs. Cracking this baby is going to take some serious explosives.
Ryan took a look at the skylights. They were made of the same stuff as the black armor. The warlord cobbled together an assortment of mines, grens, and blocks of plastic explosive and built a sort of pyramid on top of one of the skylight panes.
Put the rest back.
Not that there was much to put back. Ryan had 4 grens and 1 slap charge left. The latter he slipped inside a front pocket. The warlord finished the fusing.
That should do it.
And if we're standing too close, it'll do for us, too.
Better move over a couple of rows to the side, then.
The explosion was nothing if not spectacular. A billowing orange fireball sent a fountain of black shards high in the air. The stuff hadn't stopped falling when Thrill Bill charged out from cover. He didn't hesitate a lick, jumping through the big hole he'd made feet first. Nara did the same, then Dam. Ryan jumped last. He didn't know for sure what he was jumping into, because nobody'd bothered to tell him, but he didn't expect a deadfall 20 feet. He landed on the seat of a conference room chair with his boot soles, and it crashed apart under his weight, breaking most of his fall. If he was surprised, the people in lab coat standing around the conference table were stunned. Dam had fallen on 3 of their colleagues, inflicting serious damage to them, and none to himself.
Out of the way!
To emphasize the urgency of the situation, he cut loose with his pulse rifle, sending a superheated green slash through the air above their heads that brought down the ceiling light fixture and half the opposing wall. The scientists hit the deck pronto.
Follow me!
Ryan fell in behind her. He was ready for anything, but he soon realized it was a case of the same old, same old. They jogged through hallways choked with non-combatants.
It's Shadow Man!
They shouted as he ran by. Some of them surged forward with outstretched arms, trying to grab him and pull him down. Their expressions of eagerness and delight melted away when he charred a bit of ceiling above them. It took a snap kick in the face to dissuade the really serious grabbers. They encountered no sec men until they approached the entrance to the passageway. Nara stuck her head around a turn, then quickly pulled it back.
There must be at least 10 of them standing in front of the bulkhead door, about 70 feet down the hall. No point in saving anything.
Yeah, let's use it all.
They set out all their grens on the floor. After they divided them up, it worked out to 6 apiece, mixed frag and flash stun.
Will these hurt them?
Blast concussion should knock them all out at the very least. No way battlesuits can handle this much concentrated high-X.